Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Topically yours on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. I'm Deirdre Shuley, your host. And you know, I was thinking that the world has seen so many talented artists leave, their voices silenced, and only their volumes of work left behind for the rest of us to remember and appreciate. Folks like Phyllis Hyman, Aaliyah, Luther Vandross, Gerald Levert, and Marvin Gaye all left us. And all they've left us is for someone else to tell their story. In Marvin Gaye's case, his sister Zeola wrote a book, My Brother Marvin, a memoir by Zeola Gaye, and she also has a play under the same name, which is presently touring and stars Lynn Whitfield, Clifford Powell, Keith Washington, and Anthony Grant. The New York audience, where I'm located, you can go and catch it at the Beacon Theater, which is located at 2124 Broadway. And that's going to be at the theater from April 11th to the 14th. So interested parties can call the box office at 1-866-858-0008 for tickets, or simply purchase directly from the box office the day of the show. And, you know, artists, like most people, have their ups and downs, insecurities, and pressures, and Marvin Gaye was no exception. He has had some hits, and he has had some misses. Lovers of Marvin Gaye's music will never forget hits like What's Going On, Let's Get It On, How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You, and Sexual Healing, for which Marvin won 2 Grammy Awards. Zeola Gaye often toured with Marvin, and it was and was his greatest confidant. She was his personal assistant on his last tour, Midnight Love. And she is the co-producer and writer of the play, My Brother Marvin. And we have her here, so who better to tell her brother's story in a sensitive and dignified way than Zeola Gray. How are you, Zeola?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm glad that I had the opportunity to read your book, and I'm sure...
Oh, you read it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I actually ordered it and read it so that I knew what you were going to talk about and some of the things that you're going to tell us about him. Well, one thing I noticed in the book that he seemed to have passion.
Right.
And it seemed like everything he did was with passion. So how would you describe your brother?
As you said, very passionate. He was very loving. He was very kind and giving. Very, very, very funny. His sense of humor was just off the chain, off the chart. He was very, very spiritual.
I can relate to that.
I could go on and on, you know. And I like what you said. He had his ups and downs, and, you know, he wasn't perfect. So, you know, like none of us are.
Exactly.
But the good definitely outweighed the bad, and that was my brother, yeah.
Was it cathartic for you to write the book?
It was, yes, it was therapeutic for me. It was things that I carried in me for many years, and it was very important to me that I released all of that. And so it was very hard on certain parts, you know, even for me, to recall them. But I felt that if I could not be totally honest and truthful, what was the sense in doing it, you know?
Exactly. Were you worried what other people would think, or some of the people that you mentioned in the book? I thought you were fair, but you definitely brought out their good and bad points as well.
Yeah, I thought it was, like I said, if I couldn't be honest about it, why do it? And I wanted to show that everybody, when they're under the influence of drugs, will do things that they probably would not have done if they were not under the influence of some sort of substance abuse. And, no, I really, you know, I can't, like I wrote in the book, I can't apologize and won't apologize for what went on in my life with my brother, with my father, and with my mother, and my other siblings. You know, I'm not apologizing for that. And I know that that book and even my play won't make everybody happy. But, you know, everybody don't handle the truth. You know, and that's, I can't worry about that. I had to do what I felt I needed to do, and in hopes of helping someone else out there who may be going through the same struggles that my family went through, and can recognize it and you know, get help or do something about it to change.
Well, was he on drugs, Marvin on drugs, prior to getting into showbiz?
No, not prior. Like I wrote in the book, his first time even trying cocaine was once he was singing with Motown, and he had to record every night, you know, long hours, and someone brought it into the studio and said, why don't you try this just to keep you up? And he tried it, and it kept him up, and he got hooked on it. Which was powder cocaine at the time.
Well, would you say that it was the pressures of success that took its toll on Marvin?
I believe it was the pressures of not just success, but just being everything that was going on in his life. The IRS, dealing with with promoters that were crooked, his personal problems, you know, with his wives, and his struggles with my father, you know, the ups and downs. It was a lot going on in Marvin, you know, that he had to deal with.
Well, tell me about your childhood, because basically a lot of what went on is your relationship with your father in childhood and then, of course, in adulthood, but the situation between Marvin and his father started in childhood, right?
No, it really didn't start in childhood. Only thing I could say that went on in childhood, and mind you, Marvin was 6 years older than myself, so a lot probably, I'm sure, went on before I was able to recognize what was going on. But from my memory, Marvin would be a little rebellious and a little hard-headed, you know. But he was just a genius, even at that age. And what we call, or what they call being rebellious or hard-headed at that time, I believe that it was just a genius in him where God touched him at an early age, and he was just being experimental, you know. The conflicts between my father and my brother didn't start until Marvin became, you know, older, teenager, and his whole thing was he wasn't happy by the way my father was treating my mother. It was always a protective thing for him, like most sons would.
Mm-hmm.
They want to protect their mother, you know, and a lot of things he did not understand what could have been going on with my mother and father, but he would get involved, and that would upset my father, and, you know, that's the whole thing about she's my wife, and Marvin's, that's my mother. So it kind of started there once he became an adult. Teenager.
Well, tell me about your background, your siblings, where you grew up, and so forth.
Well, we grew up in Washington, D.C., in Southwest, and we were very, very close because our religion would not allow us to play with other kids. So we had in-home games that we made up. I was the toy because being the baby, you know, they all spoiled me and, you know, would throw me up in the air. We played many, many games and word games. We made Monopoly sets and, you know, we went on picnics, parades. My father took us to Coney Island. We made a lot of trips. We had really, I have to say, a very good, you know, childhood. There were things, like I said, that went on that I didn't quite understand, but with my father, but that was because he was drinking and I didn't understand the effects of alcohol. All I knew is that sometimes he would be happy and we would all laugh all day long, or sometimes, you know, you want to just get out of his way, you know. But on the other hand, I also want to make it very clear, he wasn't abusive to us, you know. If we did something where we disobeyed him, then yes, we got punished for it, or, you know, maybe a spanking for it, you know. And we all hated that. If it was one of us, the rest of us would sit together and we would cry along with the one who was getting the spanking, you know. And my father was fair. He believed that, you know, you spank on the butt, you know, you're behind, and no place else on the body, you know. So, to answer your question, we had a pretty good childhood. I did not understand, you know, him being such a strict disciplinarian. My father was always a father and not a daddy. But in the long run, it was good because none of us went to jail. We were always very respectful to our elders. So, you know, he raised us the best he could.
Well, how many brothers and sisters did you have? Or do you have?
It was four of us, by my mother and father, and I also had a brother, Michael, who did not live with us and was not my father's son. So he lived with my Aunt Ziola.
Well, I do want to say that the music I played earlier, my brother, was sung by Frankie Gaye, which is one of your brothers.
Yeah.
Now, what are their names? I know there's Frankie and...
There's Frankie and my sister Jean, who was the oldest, and Marvin was next, and Frankie and then myself.
Oh, okay. Now, what... I know why Marvin got it. He always liked to sing, right? Was your father a pastor or something like that in a church?
Yes, he was. He was a bishop in the Pentecostal religion, and we all sang in church. Marvin was the soloist, and the rest of us sang in the choir. That's when I recognized the fact, I'm sorry, there's this beeping in the hotel room. That's when I realized that he, you can hear it back there too, that there was something very special with him. Marvin used to travel with my father as my father became a traveling minister, and Marvin would go with him, and just it would just be the two of them, and Marvin would sing in the church, you know, and my father would you know, get the sermon.
Did your father only want him to sing gospel originally?
Originally, yes. You know, he thought that that was going to be his calling, was to sing gospel, yes.
So what? How did Marvin get his start in show business?
You mean in the secular world, in the secular music?
Yes.
Well, he, when he was in high school, they had a group and they would sing on the corner. And then after, you know, people would hear them singing on the corner, someone heard them and put them in a club, and they did a club scene. And at the club scene, Harvey Fuqua happened to be at one of the clubs and heard the group and loved them. And he wanted them to be his new moon glows. And that's what happened. He brought Marvin home. I mean, Marvin brought him home to meet my parents, and he wanted my parents' blessings to for Marvin to join him as a moonglow. And, of course, my parents gave their blessing, and Marvin ended up in Detroit, and the rest is history.
And that's how he met Barry Gordy?
Uh-huh,
Barry Gordy's daughter. Tell me about that.
No, it wasn't his daughter. It was his sister, Anna.
Oh, his sister. Okay.
It was his sister. All of that was in the book. I guess you forgot that part. But he married Anna. He fell in love with her, and they got married, and that's what happened in that case.
Well, I bring that up because if my audience didn't read the book, they learned that through this interview.
Well, it's in the play. I addressed all of that in my play also. Oh. But like you said, even if they didn't read the book or see the play, but yes, that's what happened. He married Barry Gordy's sister.
And
Anna. Uh-huh.
And did he marry her out of love, or was it convenient?
No, I just said that they fell in love.
Okay, I didn't hear that part.
Yeah, he loved her. They loved each other dearly. He always loved her. He never stopped loving Anna. Even after they divorced.
And how did he meet his second wife? He was married twice, I gather.
Yes, he was. He met his second wife. She met him in Marvin's studio. And apparently love hit again. And as soon as he saw her, he fell in love with her also. And that's how that happened.
Okay.
So we can say he had two loves of his life.
Well, that's fortunate. A lot of people only have one, or some don't ever find their mate, their true
that's
mate.
That's very true. That's why I love the song, If I Should Die Tonight. That's such a beautiful love song, because it basically says that some people never find their dream, you know. So that's a blessing to be able to find two dreams. You know,
absolutely,
and be in love.
Well, you, for example, were you drawn to show business by Marvin, or were you also doing backup singing and so forth?
No, I'm not really in show business. I basically, I was Marvin's assistant. I on one of the tours, I was a dancer for him, and which I totally enjoyed. I could not believe that I was getting paid for doing something that I enjoyed so much and having so much fun. But basically, I was Marvin's assistant and wardrobe coordinator. I would dress the band and the singers and Marvin. And then I just became, like I said, his personal assistant. I would, you know, make sure he took his vitamins and had his health drink. And I massaged him after every show. I would massage his leg and his feet because he had really bad calluses. And he would dance so hard, even on the calluses that he had, and they were very painful. And the only other record that I was on of his was Got to Give It Up. That was me making all the party noises in the background. And basically that was my extent of being on stage.
But I know it must have been fun. Was it not so much fun some days having to get him to concerts?
Well, let's say it was a labor of love.
Okay. I'll leave it at that. But let's just say you're on tour right now with the play. How many cities are you touring?
I think we have about 22 cities lined up. We're just about at the halfway mark, I think.
Where are you now, South Carolina?
I'm in South Carolina right now, and we leave here in the morning going to Atlanta. And then we'll be in your city, New York.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the play.
I hope so. And I want people to know that my play is not a musical. It's a drama. I talk about the man behind the music. I deal with my life, with my brother, my father, and my mother, and my other siblings. I touch on other things, but I want people to know that if you want some sort of closure, you know, I provide that. I just tell what really happened. And I feel in my heart that Marvin's fans and those who love him needed to know what happened.
Yes.
You know, not what happened, but why and what led up to it. You need to know, they need to know the background. You know, that's so important to know how you were raised. You know, how my father was raised, how my mother was raised. You know, you need to know that my father had a brain tumor that he didn't know he had, that set on the part of the brain that controls your emotions. And along with being an alcoholic, which he was, that didn't help matters at all. So that's why I say I address, you know, addiction, even myself. I was on drugs. And I'm 11 years clean today, but I went in and got help. Thank you. And I wish that I had been a little early, a day earlier, to get Marvin the help that I had set up for him that Monday, but he got killed that Sunday. So that's really the message. I don't want people to confuse the music, now hearing Marvin's music, to the message that I'm trying to present.
Are there is no music in the play at all?
There's no Marvin music. I tried to license his music, but they will not give it to me. But there is music in the play, great music. I have great singers. There's a lot of spirituals. There are other songs inspired by Marvin, that original songs, and then I have like a mini concert, a European concert tour of Tina Turner and Tina, who's the other artist? I'm sorry, I'm looking, and Gladys Knight. I watch this play every night, unless you know that. But yeah, it's entertaining also. I mean, there's going to be sad parts. It's almost like a roller coaster ride that you would be on. So isn't that like all sad, but there's funny parts in it, because Marvin was funny, but when it gets to the serious part, it's serious. And I want to let people know that, you know, paranoia from drugs and just the effect of drugs is not a funny and a laughing matter. It's very sad, you know.
It's very sad. You know, I guess anyone that's ever been around show business, and not necessarily show business, but around someone that's been using drugs, knows what it's like, especially people that have been on crack, which is, to me, that's the closest thing to demon possession as I see it.
Yeah, it was. That was one of the deepest drugs I think ever could have hit the street, because you totally lose all control. You know,
it changes your whole personality. It's almost like you're somebody else.
No self-control whatsoever. That's the one that I knew. That's the one that brought me down, you know, where I said, I can't do this. You know, I don't want to be like this. I need help, you know.
But doesn't it get to the point that you're almost in love with it and you can't leave it? Because I've known people that will stay home all day just doing it and get mad if you even want them to come to work or whatever.
Exactly. I was a functional addict. I worked, and I did that because I wanted to be able to pay for my drugs. You know, it's vicious. It was like a vicious cycle, and it's a very, very, very heavy drug to be addicted to. Yes, it is.
Well, tell me about Lynn Whitfield is in the play. Does she play you, or what role does she play?
She plays my mother, and she does a fantastic job of portraying my mother. I love how she shows that lighter side of my mother, the sexiness of my mother, and the loving and spiritual side of my mother. My mother was a praying woman, and mind you, my mother wasn't addicted to anything except God. You know, that was her addiction, which is a good one to have. And my sister was not addicted to anything. It was basically Marvin and myself and Frankie was an alcoholic, and my father was an alcoholic. So addiction ran in my family, like I'm sure it runs in a lot of people's, you know, family other than my own.
I think people,
when they see my play, I think they will recognize things that's going on in their household or somebody that they know. I want to show that my family was dysfunctional, but we weren't any different than anybody else's family except we had Marvin, you know. Other than that, I can't say that we were any different than anybody else.
Now, who plays Marvin in the play?
Tony Grant plays the younger, the middle-aged Marvin, like the Motown Marvin. And Keith Washington plays the really sexual healing Marvin, you know, the latter Marvin that was where the drugs had really taken a toll on him.
Well, that's another addiction that he may have had. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Was there also a sexual addiction?
Well, I would let's say that he loves sex. Yeah, but I wouldn't call it an addiction. He, you know, he loves sex like most men. You know, he loves women.
But you mentioned in your book that he loved all types of sex. He was, let's just say he was creative.
Well, let's just say he was creative.
Okay.
And I'm not recalling you saying he loved all kinds of sex.
I'm trying to say it in a way that
he enjoyed watching porn, pornographic, and I know I wrote that, but
right.
I'm not sure what other parts you're talking about. You know, there were other, you know, different engagements, probably as menages, maybe, or
right. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Well, we all did that. Not all, but a lot of people has been in menages. I've been in menages. So,
let's just say he was very open sexually.
Yes, you will.
You didn't mind experimenting and so forth.
Exactly.
Also, you mentioned, and I'm going to play the song because you did mention it in your book, that he sang the Star Spangled Banner like no other.
No other person, as far as I'm concerned. He wanted that Star Spangled Banner to be like a Mahalia Jackson sort of, rendition. You know, he wanted his Star Spangled Banner to touch the hearts of men, you know, to feel it. And I think he did exactly that.
Well, I'm going to play that if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind. I love that.
We'll let the audience hear his version.
Okay.
Marvin Gaye, Star Spangled Banner. Well, I played that song because you had mentioned how wonderful it was, and I saw that Marvin had a sense of what would be a successful recording. For example,
mm-hmm.
What's Going On and You Sure Loved a Ball, he told Berry Gordy that they would be good songs, and Berry was reluctant to release them. So tell me about that.
Well, I can only tell you what Barry has said himself. He thought that releasing that record would ruin Marvin's career, and Marvin was determined to release the record. He had an enlightenment, I guess you could say, from God that wrote that song for him or with him or, you know, guided him to write those lyrics, and he felt that was something mankind needed to know. And once he was determined to release it and it became a hit, then, of course, Barry said that he was glad that he did it. He made the record. So, because I wasn't around during Marvin's Motown years. I was at home. Like I said, Marvin was 6 years older than myself. So I only wrote, or I can only tell you what was said.
Well, the circumstances in your home changed when Marvin, you were raised in a middle-class family?
I was raised in a Pentecostal family, yeah.
Was it economically middle-class?
No, we were poor.
So
we were poor.
So circumstances changed big time after Marvin.
Oh.
How was
became
that?
Became famous? Mm-hmm. Yeah, when Marvin became famous, that was one of his goals, was to be able to provide for his mother and his father so that we would not have to live in the project for the rest of our lives. You know, so my mother would not have to catch 3 buses to go and do domestic work, for other people and cook for them. So that was his dream. That was his goal, to make life more easy and pleasant for the family. And he was able to do it, and that's how that came about also with God's help.
And that had to be a big change, and was it? Because when money comes, all kinds of things happen.
Well, like I wrote in the book, money breeds power. And that's the bottom line to that, you know.
But your father, did he suddenly feel usurped?
Did my father do what? I'm sorry.
Did he feel usurped? Because he was the head of the family, and then suddenly somebody's a bigger breadwinner.
Of course, and that bothered him. Again, like I said, you have to realize what I'm saying. With a brain tumor, and you're alcoholic, and your son becomes, basically the breadwinner. Of course, circumstances will change. Jealousy set in, you know. The love never left, you know, but jealousy did set in. And he did not handle that portion of the family too well. But again, like I said, if people will understand the whole background of my family, who was not perfect, and neither was my brother perfect, then I think that people will understand what I'm trying to present, and that is, like I said earlier, a message that if you can help someone that you love, get them some help. If you're having problems, it's not an embarrassing thing. You don't have to be ashamed to go and get some help. You know, any addiction is a disorder, a disease, and that can be helped and cured if you want it.
I agree there. Did Frankie ever go and get help, your other brother?
No, Frankie didn't get help. I think he tried, but he didn't. You have to want it, you know. There are people who can come. When I was in rehab, there were people who left and came back. You have to really want it. You can't make anybody go get help. You can suggest it. You can try to talk them into do it, but they can, and they might do it. But if they don't really want that help, it won't. It's not going to work. You have to really want it. You have to want to stay clean, because what I learned in rehab is that addiction just sits on your shoulder, and it can surface at any time. It's very patient. Anything can happen in your life that can make you go back to whatever you were addicted to. I don't care what kind of addiction it is, you know, but you have to want to not do it. I chose not to ever do that again in life, you know. If I had taken Marvin to rehab that Monday, he agreed to go, but can I sit here and tell you that he probably would not have tried cocaine again? No, I can't. He would have. You have to want it. You have to want to stay clean.
Well, was that the first time he was going to go to a rehab, or had he tried before?
No, that would have been the first time.
and you know, I don't want to cut this real short. I have to get dressed. The car's picking me up in about 20 minutes, and I didn't know our interview would be as long as it is.
Oh, they didn't tell you it was an hour interview?
No, they didn't. Yeah. I'm sorry. No, she, my publicist didn't say it. Tell me that.
Well, before you go, I'd like at least to find out, can you tell us what led up to the night he died?
No, I want you to read it, or come see the play. That's something I don't want to discuss on the air.
All right, I have to.
I believe that if you start, because if I tell you, you won't get the whole thing unless you can start at the beginning and see it or read it that led up to that, you know.
Well, tell me this. Your father was arrested. What happened there? A lot of people don't know exactly what happened there.
He was arrested, and his charges were dropped in manslaughter, and he got 5 years probation.
And was the tumor removed or whatever happened there?
Yes, that's when we discovered the tumor, when he was arrested.
And how did that change the dynamics of the family towards him?
Well, the dynamics of the family had already changed because Marvin was already had left us. He had already shot Marvin. So when that happened, the family dynamics changed when that happened, and it never got back to the way it was.
Did that end the marriage between your mother and father as well?
No, my parents did not divorce, but my mother, they did not live together any longer.
All right, well, I'd like to tell the people about your book. Where can they get it?
They can get my book on Amazon, or they can go to my website, and if they want to get it another way, PayPal or whatever. You know, check or credit card. And my website is violagay.com. And you can also get it on Amazon.
Okay. And the play again is going to be, at least in New York, the Beacon Theater on 74th and Broadway. And it's going to play there 4 days, from the 11th of April to the 14th. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And
yes.
Then are you moving on from there to where?
I think we go to Chicago next, and Chicago, Texas. We go to Kentucky, Newark, New Jersey. We go on the West Coast to California, Oakland, Sacramento, and Los Angeles, and hopefully Vegas.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. I want to again tell the audience, if they want to see the play, it's under the same name as the book, by the way, My Brother Marvin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can call the box office at 1-866-858-0008 for tickets, or just go to the box office the day of the show and buy them in person. And
yes, please come out to see it.
Indeed. And you can also get your book on Amazon.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing some time with us. I know you're getting ready to
go to the show.
Go to the show in South Carolina.
Okay. Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it, the time.
Our pleasure.
Okay. And you have a blessed day. And
thank
your audience. You're welcome.
Well, folks, we're going to end the show a little earlier than anticipated, but I want to thank each of you for coming on and listening. I know you were looking forward to it. And this is the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. And again, my guest today was Ziola Gay, and I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler. And as always, I want to thank my audience for making my topic topically yours. Now, Ziola mentioned a song, If I Should Die Tonight. I have it, so we'll play that. And this is by Marvin Gaye. want to say that Ziola, she splits her time between Las Vegas, Nevada, and Los Angeles, California. And she has two lovely daughters, Kim and Monique. And she has now a grandson, and I think his name is Dominique. And I just want to say that she spent many years traveling with her brother, Marvin, as his protective sister on European and U.S. tours. So I advise you or suggest, if you're interested in knowing more about Marvin, that you go down to, if you're in New York, to the Beacon Theater, those 4 days that they'll be there, the 11th and the 14th, through the 11th and the 14th. Okay? And that's on Broadway and 74th Street in the Beacon Theater. And, well, I think I see that we have a listener. I'll ask if there's something you want to ask. Hello, 4689. Hello. Well, I guess it's just somebody listening in. And again, we're going to end the show now, and I thank you for all for being here, and I'm going to end it with Marvin's most wonderful song. The one that's my favorite is What's Going On.
Hey, what's happening?
Oh, hey, how you doing? Party, man.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. War is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find our way
to bring some love and here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
If you buy the book on Amazon and other places, and if you go to the plays, they're touring. You can always go to ZeolaGaye.com and find out their touring schedule if you're not in New York. As I said, in New York, the play will be starting Thursday, April 11th and ending April 14th. And you can find out those personal things that we don't know as to what happened that night that Marvin got killed, why his father killed him, and what led up to it. And, of course, as a writer and the playwright, Zeola would want you to read her book and go to the show to find out. And so that's what we'll have to do. And thank you again for listening. This has been the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.